Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, the headlines over the weekend have been dominated by Boris Johnson and continue to be dominated by Boris Johnson. Today, a number of Conservative MPs have taken exception to his line in the Mail on Sunday yesterday, James, about suicide vests. Are these the people who were always anti-Boris anyway?
I think the people who've jumped on these comments are the people who would never vote for Boris Johnson in a month of Sundays. I think there is I think in a weird way, the problem for Boris Johnson, though, is that they've actually quite cleverly, by getting into the public mind, the idea that this is some kind of dead cat strategy designed to distract attention from his troubles in his personal life, they've ended up giving kind of more oxygen to that story. I still think that the kind of crucial question with Boris is, can he get to 106 MPs, which is what he would need to be guaranteed of making the final two? And I think when you consider how strongly those who are against Boris, he would need to be sure of 106 to be sure of getting to the final two, because there would be tactical voting on an epic scale to try and stop it.
Katie, do you think his comments have struck a chord with the other half or the other group of the Conservative Party who are very sympathetic to what he thinks about Chequers and who would be amenable to a Boris leadership bid?
I don't know if his comments have necessarily struck a chord in the sense that they've read that and been, that's exactly what I think Theresa May is wearing, a suicide vest. But at the same time, I think that people who support Boris are defensive of him. And they do feel that when he says stuff, people overreact more than they would anyone else. So there is a sense that there is always a Stop Boris campaign. I think what muddies the water a bit over the past few days is obviously we've had lots of allegations about Boris Johnson's personal life. We know that his marriage is ending. There's been claims involving a former aide. And on the Sunday Times, we had a story about, you know, a dossier apparently created by Number 10, this dossier about his personal life. And that apparently goes back to, you know, just after the EU referendum when Theresa May was trying to get the leadership the first time. But I think it builds into this idea that it's not fair game and people are going out to attack Boris Johnson. As for his comments in the Mail on Sunday article, I think that has been widely perceived to be a dead cat strategy. So he had this big story he didn't want anyone talking about. And by going and using colourful language on something he already has made clear that he thinks is awful, which is the Chequers deal, it diverted attention away from that. And I think in that sense it did succeed, because it was those comments that ran on every, you know, political programme on Sunday.
But James, has it succeeded in moving the dial on Chequers?
I still think Chequers faces two fundamental problems. The smaller problem is the number of Tory MPs who are against it, because you can argue the dynamic will be different when she has a deal. The second problem is the EU's attitude to it. You know, the FT has this story that lots of people are saying, oh, look at this, they're getting ready to do a deal. But at the Salzburg summit, the EU leaders will change Michel Barnier's negotiating guidelines. This is what Number 10 is very much hoping for. But if you're going to read down into the story, it's quite clear that they're going to change these guidelines in a kind of cosmetic way, rather than in a kind of, oh yeah, we'll accept this UK plan. And I think this is the interesting question, which is, I think the EU is still essentially sticking to this position, which is you can basically have Norway or Canada, but Canada would be a bit more than Canada, but nowhere near as much as Theresa May thinks Chequers is. And Theresa May can't make the concessions to get to Norway. She wouldn't survive doing that. So I can't help but thinking at some point, even if the language is dressed up to disguise this, she ends up having to accept something that is closer to Canada than Chequers.
Katie, one diplomat is quoted in this FT piece as saying this is a Save Theresa operation. Is it?
I think there's always been a realisation by Brussels that they could push Theresa May quite far. I think they've shown that they can do that. But they needed to try and not push her so far that she would lose her position. There is an idea that they would much rather negotiate with someone like Theresa May and read from that what you will, than someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg or Boris Johnson, someone who they think would genuinely just walk away, would do no deal, and it was less of kind of bluster, the talk. So there probably is a sense of that, but I do think that the way that actually the EU and Barnier have been quite frank in their criticism of Chequers means that it's really not their top priority. They've given quite strong signals so far that they don't think Chequers is going to work. And I think that going forward means that even if they're trying to help her a bit, it's not substantial enough that I really think their main priority is saving her position. Otherwise, I think they'd be adopting a completely different Brexit stance.
I think the extent to which they will help her is a bit like the way they helped her with the backstop in December. They, as the draft legal text they showed afterwards produced, didn't really change the backstop very much. But they added in some language about how this doesn't change the status of Northern Ireland within the United Kingdom. This won't create a border in the Irish Sea, even though by logic it suggests one. And then when the UK said, oh, your legal text doesn't work, they said, oh, no, all that stuff is your responsibility to fix. We were just adding in what you wanted. So I think that the help they will give her is, A, this Barnier offer to kind of de-dramatise the language on the backstop, and then B, on the political declaration, which isn't legally binding, I think they will make some warm words that will enable Theresa May to suggest that what she's getting is closer to Chequers than it will end up being in reality.
And finally, Katie, you had the pleasure of attending Tory Glastonbury at the weekend. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I've done two festivals this summer, Labour Live, the Jazz Fest, and then this weekend, Tory Glastonbury, which is also known as the Festival of Big Ideas, I think, or Ideas.
You haven't got the armbands on from either, which...
I didn't even get an armband. I got a lanyard I had to write my own name on, and someone else had already written the name and crossed it out, so it wasn't... I did have a Tory MP, Jesse Norman, offer me his wristband when he was leaving. He didn't stay very late. But yeah, this is George Freeman's pet project, so it's the idea of not actually party political. They want this idea of a space to debate different political ideas, and rather than Glastonbury you have a pyramid stage, here you have the economy tent and the arts and culture tent, so lots of think tanks took it over. I would say the atmosphere probably wasn't quite as buzzing as a music festival, but there was a decent turnout.
James, the Tory party does have a hunger for ideas and for a sort of sense of purpose. Do you think that the Tory Glastonbury is where it's at, or do you think the thinking is really being done elsewhere?
I think what the Tory Glastonbury, what George Freeman has hit on, is there is a desperate kind of Tory yearning to be inspired again. I think that, you know, that someone who can articulate kind of national renewal and give the party kind of post-Brexit kind of plan for Britain, can give the party hope, that's going to strike a chord in the leadership contest. I think lots of people talk about Tory contests. I think the Tory grassroots are much more in the mood they were in when they picked David Cameron than the mood they were in when they picked Ian Duncan Smith.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And you can listen to this and all our other podcasts on the iTunes store. This one's called Coffee House Shots. We've got a special offer for podcast listeners, 12 issues of The Spectator for £12 and a free Spectator-branded thermally insulated water bottle. Just go to spectator.co.uk/water. Thanks for listening.